switching, but that's not why I'm telling you. I need a favor. Yeah. I only told one other person about this. An old friend. She's a helmet too.
Weathered boots land 10 toes down, plashing into a dense stretch of a hot moss clearing. Taxer Van, Fieldship 142's spec helmet, adjusts his anti-gamma mask and oxygen reservoir nestled underneath his vest. He then waves off his tackler and Fieldship hovering above. Once I make contact, I'll message back with an update within 2 hours. Wish me luck. His tackler signals from the window, soars off into the clouds, going incognito, but remains close by, should an audible get called. Tack traverses the dense and severely mutated folds of this lost jungle planet. Its greenery glowed even under the sun, emitting hums at decibels equivalent to temple monks producing a score for this endless, impenetrable, verdant paradise. Its canopy was rained by holly, birch, mutant crab apples, with occasional openings in its crowns, allowing plenty of light through for an overabundance of sprouts to control the boulder-covered grounds below. Curving, climbing plants grasped every girthy tree as a medley of flowers, which claimed remnants of light, looking almost out of place in the otherwise amber-esque lower levels of the jungle floor. Neon mint green spores the size of baseballs float about like chaotic traffic patterns. Diverse glowing eyes peer through virulent toxic hazes as equally exotic chatter of the jungle's alien denizens reverberate throughout this mishmash of beastly noises belonging mostly to varmint, brightened up the jungle, annoyingly out of sync with the croaks and hisses of reptiles in the nearby ponds. Seeing shit like this made being a speck worth the danger. Not too long into his expedition, Tack hears a distinct human-like beckon for his attention. Psst. Psst. Hidden within the green, he spots a helmeted human crouched, waving him down. Intel suggests that, other than the missing persons likely to be casualties, there were no other humans planted side. This must have been who he was looking for. Without hesitation, Tack ducks down low and dashes toward their position with his hand on his holster. The stranger removes their helmet, revealing an older woman with graying red locks and bright green eyes, old enough to be his mother, and incredibly fit and battle-hardened in the way she carried herself. She doesn't introduce herself and appears very distracted. "It seems our mutual friend left out your name," Tack whispers. Silent and steady, she signals for him to keep quiet with a shushing finger over her lips, then points to the sky. Roaring across the sky, high enough to be seen, yet low enough to set the canopy ablaze, an airborne mech zips by with hundreds of red tracking lasers combing through the underbrush for potential targets. This technological marvel stops in place just long enough for Tack to get a glimpse of the robotic menace. This seraphim angel of countless oscillating cogs with a plumage of gunmetal plates gleaming under a trio of suns. The stranger grabs and holds Tack back just in time as a tracking laser nearly grazes his nose and finds itself upon a furry critter clambering up a tree. The angelic machine ignores it and continues on, rocketing away northbound until out of view and earshot. Now that it was safe, she finally settles down and approaches Tack. He notices the whites of her eyes, glazed over, veiny, saturated with an orange tint. "You're the spec Mark is looking out for, eh?" She sizes Tack up and extends her hand for a shake. "Beatrix." She murmurs with a dehydrated rasp. Tack gives her a firm shake. She continues. "Thought this would have been a simple come and collect, but these idiots must have accidentally activated weapons somewhere. This damn mech has been a menace since I arrived. Not sure if it's partially functional or what, but it seems to get on my trail and loses its read on me. Forced a detour away from the wreckage when I got here. Then out of nowhere, About an hour ago, it just rained hell on the entire jungle, killing everything in a mile radius, and we have to make sure we're not nearby when it does that again. It's just so unpredictable because it's broken. Beatrix lights a cig. Follow me back to my ship, Spec Tech. We'll devise a plan and a safer route to the wreck so we can get the hell out of here before the crowd arrives. Tack speaks into his earpiece. Tackler, be advised. Active hostile in the area. Airborne mech armed with heavy weapons. Possibly connected to a nearby military facility. Maintain distance from my current position unless otherwise instructed. I've made contact with another helmet. Beatrix. We're proceeding into the jungle to reach your field ship.
Copy that,
the tackler says. Beatrix begins leading just before pausing to an...
Right?
Response. Right what? Right what?
Copy that is what you say when, like, in response to when I heard you, right?
Yes.
Okay. Copy that.
Beatrix stops in her tracks and embraces herself for what would be a violent coughing fit. Tack pretends not to focus on her display of questionable health. Beatrix waves it off, blaming it on the neon pollen and the dehydration caused by the temperature change. She then continues to lead the way. A half hour passes. Tack's eyes drift slowly over the setting suns under the sweltering heat. Planet's day span is much shorter here, but grew warmer as the day progressed toward its final act. Beatrix's field ship comes into sight, reflecting a majestic sunset. It was a quaint and narrow cruiser, appearing to sacrifice size for lightweight stealth, as it lay nestled within a small clearing. A small camp was set up, occupied by a trio of helmets, standing shoulder to shoulder, literally standing by for Beatrix's return. Tack's fingers find their way to his firearm on his hip, but Beatrix ensures him it's okay and that they are with her. Tack side-eyes the strange trio of pale, dead-eyed, red-headed helmets, each one looking like a poorly cloned version of the previous. Beatrix retrieves a large water tin from her bag and tosses it to them, and proceeds to a table she set up filled with various hand-scrawled maps and markers. Tack and the red-headed men remain locked in eye contact until the silence is broken by aggressive scribbling and grunting as Beatrix cooks up a plan of approach. I've scouted the surrounding areas in each direction from this coordinate. She slides her finger across the paper, except north. There could be a suitable path there following the riverbed. However, she slides her finger over to a sketch of a cavern. This cave looks to lead up into our mountain. If we ascend the mountain, we could approach, then descend from the mountain, landing us behind the wreckage site. From our vantage point, we'd see the mech coming. If it came at all, I don't think it'd come at all. Beatrix seemed oddly fearless and somewhat careless of this alien jungle and the potential perils. Special team helmets were rumored to be fearless and outstanding in their ability, but not dumb. Distracted by the stares of her supposed crew, Tack offers his 2 cents. Without climbing equipment, the chances of us descending successfully while under attack are essentially zero. We may be more likely to get spotted if we follow the river, but if we are, then we'll have more options to evade and take cover. Beatrix frowns. Tack looks back at her companions and indiscreetly asks, "Who are they, exactly?" Beatrix walks around to Tack's side of the table. "Them? No one, just my crew." She waves at them, but they don't wave back. They only continue to fixate their gaze on Tack. "Never mind them. The mountains on this planet are spiky enough to provide ample cover, and I don't plan on getting discovered. As long as we cover that shiny bald head of yours, we'd be fine." She begins coughing up a lot of fluid and discreetly wipes it from her lips. Tack looks visibly confused at this woman's logic during this volatile situation. His anxiety ticks up a notch. "Unless you're all pushing it too far with the stems, I think you all have bigger problems." Tack stares down Beatrix. Marcus's concerns for his friend begin to make a bit more sense now. Beatrix, how long have you had that cough? She looks befuddled, as if a mental fog consumes her in this very moment. Haven't noticed. It's nothing. Like I said, the mutant pollen. Regards to the mountains, there's problems, no doubt. Absolutely, there's problems, but we're specs. It's nothing we can't handle. Our only problem is figuring out how we're gonna haul all that salvage we find back to the ship with just you and I. What about your crew? Tack asks. She glances over at the three again, but avoids eye contact this time. They won't be doing any heavy lifting. They depend on me and I depend on them. Just not for lifting the big guns. As for special teams, you and I. The strangest trio begin to walk up the ramp into the ship. Tack's inquisitive glare settles back onto Beatrix. Looking into her eyes was like staring into two bleeding oranges. Tack retrieves additional protective mesh from his pack and wraps it all around his face, further securing his anti-gamma mask. He then pulls a pair of worn ballistic goggles from his pack. These weren't meant for protecting against pollen, but they'll do, he thinks to himself. You have any antibiotics aboard your ship? If we don't do something about those eyes, you might go blind while we're working. Then we'll both be up Schitt's Creek. Stubborn, Beatrix snatches her rifle off of the table and spits in the direction of her ship. To the abyssum with my eyes. I'd sooner gouge them out myself if I don't get the jump on this. I wouldn't be able to live with myself. You coming with me or are you waiting for the crowd? Marcus's friend. Depends. What are you after? Really? Yeah, what are you after? Let me think. I'm after getting my rent paid for the next 3 years, an Atlas bartender droid to mix my drinks, a new pilot seat, and what else? Prostitutes. Tack looks unamused. If you stop wasting time, I'll even let you collect half of the helmets we pry from the heads of these poor souls. Coach pays hefty for the things they don't want their competitors to have. Beatrix stows away her rifle and leans over behind the table to retrieve a large object the size of a toddler, draped in a wet blood-stained cloth, and tosses it over her shoulder using its long leather strap. She begins marching toward the river route illustrated on her map. If you're not coming, more for me, she says, while leaving the encampment clearing. Tack waits for Beatrix to leave, and then makes his way over to her ship ramp to confront her suspicious crew. Approaching behind the trio, Tack authoritatively questions their motives for contracting with Coach. They stand in solidarity, each with equally puzzled faces. One speaks, his voice a raspy purr. We seek fortune. Tack walks toward them slowly. How does being here bring you that, helmet? Suddenly, the speaker looks fed up with the stranger's pushy, aggressive prying. The man on the right softly murmurs, It's unfortunate you haven't been filled in on the opportunity that awaits here, my friend. His peer on his right follows. It seems her sibling has found another way to pester us. Yes, and going great lengths to get a speck to be the nuisance this time, the middle man adds. It's none of our business to tell you anything, helmet. We are just keeping after the books. The one on the left makes an awful attempt at a smile. You hear a slight tear of flesh peel from his jowl as a little fluid squirts out from under his jawline like a black market deflated implant. They then each turn and sink and make their way up the ramp. More for us, one of them murmurs, when suddenly, in the blur of motion, the broadside of Tack's hand whips into the man's neck, nearly severing his throat with a precise chop, followed by an alternating chain of knees to the face, then violently thrown headfirst into a wall. Surprised by the outright assault, the second one flinches and is soon grabbed by the speck and slammed flat back onto the ground. Unfazed by the trauma, the man lets out a horrid, inhuman roar. Just as suspected, Tack thinks, as he completes his arm lock on his victim and uses the blunt force of his leverage to shatter arm and elbow across his knee. The vile stranger bellows until Tack brings his boot to its skull, silencing the creature. Breathing hard, Tack turns slowly to the third red-headed man who we see severely disoriented and cowering backward into the ship's entrance, clutching a rifle in hand, aiming it right at Tack. Several feet away, Tack, with hands up and reaching distance from the discombobulated gunman, dares not to test. Something was already wrong with these men, but it became more apparent as the profusely dripping man's eyes rolled back into its head while emitting gross guttural clicking sounds that resonated from within his belly and out through his throat. The sound then escalates into an unbearable siren just as the man turns the rifle right side up into its own mouth in preparation to off himself, when suddenly Tack grabs the stock with both hands and bashes the butt of the rifle into its head, knocking it on its back. He steps over the strange man and smashes him in the face again and again, and a third more for good measure. Orange slime leaks profusely from its face and drips from the rifle, but it didn't seem to move other than the steady, shallow rhythm of its chest, rising and falling. The brutal string of close quarters altercations leaves Tack slightly winded. The air was thick and the jungle was humid. He checks himself all over. Anti-gamma mask still intact, and suit wholly unscathed. Tack puts the rifle on with a three-point sling and steps off the ramp, setting off in the direction Beatrix had headed. Beatrix's crew left beaten in his wake. Though he'd seen which way she'd gone, Beatrix's tracks seemed to have vanished with her steps into the living brush, jungle displacing any evidence of traversal like a wound healing over itself. Guess I'll just have to head towards the cave. Shit, Tack murmurs to himself as he finishes the knot binding the trio of unconscious suspects. Tack wipes his head and gets one last look at sunlight before turning toward the abyssal jungle without a tackler.
While you're out there, maybe try to out there. See if she's okay for me. You know, see if she's otherwise for me. You know, she pushes herself. You know, see if she pushes. I'd really appreciate that. I'd really appreciate that. Let me know what you find. I figure if you, you know, just stay clear from the base, you'd be safe.
Hours pass, and Tack takes a knee to catch his breath from enduring the perilous paths of the nightfall. He peeks around a tree and begins surveying the cave entrance, his bald head dimly lit by the glowing red flat petal plants growing up the tree. He immediately spots Beatrix laying unconscious and convulsing off of the beaten path, and just above her was a humanoid plant-like creature suspended from a nearby tree, several vines protruding from its back. Its veiny, bluish-green flesh glowed like much of the mutated fauna surrounding the cave entrance. It continues to probe her limp body with a large single eyeball plastered upon its head. It begins to reach for her, and with unknown intentions, begins to cradle her with its hundreds of tiny vines reaching out from under. Tack's eyes widen. Judging by the drained husks of once living creatures suspended around the cave entrance, it was appropriate to assume this was probably her destiny, and thus would conclude Marcus's wellness check. Tack grunts, raising his stolen rifle and thinking to himself that he too might require a certain kind of check after all of this hassle. Tack takes aim at the creature, aiming down its big eye, inhaling, and slowly exhaling. The bullet hits its mark, puncturing the creature's bulbous and exposed eye. It screeches, recoils, and ravels itself up into a ball of vines, disappearing far up into its domain. Tack runs up to Beatrix, looking her over for obvious injuries. There were none, but what stuck out was a thick, pulsating vein, glistening orange under her collar. From what he could see, it ran from her neck down into her abdomen. Removing her tattered cloak, the speck finds an aberration of flesh plastered just behind her right shoulder. An orange parasitic mass, slowly pulsating and visibly agitated. She was still breathing, but every passing moment saw her more physically sick than the one before. Tack pulls Beatrix over and onto his shoulders, spots her belongings nearby draped in a wet blood-stained cloth and grabs it as well, keeping an eye out for any more alien plants, and starts making his way back to her ship. It's squatting in the hollow boughs of an alien tree, tactfully plastered with large silken petals drenched in the blood of an unidentified beast riddled with bullets nearby. Tack remains vigilant through the night. Beatrix seems to be succumbing to terrible nightmares caused by the mental anguish inflicted by the unidentified parasite. Tack pats her sweat, pulling her under the humidity. Curious and within arm's reach, Tack pulls a corner of the drape back slowly. A large bloody forehead and a wayward eyeball stares blankly at Tack, startling Tack enough for him to awaken Beatrix, although only for a moment, before returning to her torment. She looked shaken to the core, and though he wanted to save her from her madness, he couldn't. This wasn't something that a field dressing and some sleep was gonna help. He knows he'll need to get her evac'd to real medical assistance. The parasitic mass hasn't slowed its pulsation, however. She doesn't appear to be any worse than she has for the past hour, at least for now. Tack wasn't going to risk it. Time was everything that they had. He scoops her up and hesitantly stares at the decapitated head in the bag. It scoops that up as well, and proceeds to trek back to her ship once more. Tack arrives at the encampment in the clearing of her ship. Orange tracks of ooze can be seen painted every which way, and the three strangers he knocked out were nowhere in sight. It was quiet, until the silence was broken by some static disrupting Mark Thornton's attempts to reach him. Tack silences his earpiece in the meantime, setting his eyes on the ship, then ensuring his clip was full. He lays Beatrix down on her side at the edge of the clearing, propping her head up with his bedroll from his coach survival bag. "I'm sorry, Beatrix. I've got to get you out of here, and I don't think I can do that and save your crew." He stands, checks his anti-gamma mask, and starts to steadily advance into the clearing with rifle up, ready, stepping over ooze and beelining for the door to Beatrix's ship. Once at the entrance, he dribbles his eye across the entry interior, from the central hub with two open doors to the antique spiral stairway leading up to the ship's control center on the second level. All of it absurdly clean. It was hard to believe that Beatrix lived here. Outside of his own was the smallest field ship he'd ever seen. It was like walking into a clean single-bedroom city apartment, minus the orange ooze trail smeared up the wall. Reception seems to be returning to Tack's devices, but he still needed to locate the communications tower. Slowly, steady, and as quietly as possible, Tack starts to clear the ship, sweeping across the central hub and what he can see of the spiral stairs, looking for any sign of the missing strangers or something else before he looked in any doors. Tack surveys the first open room with the nose of his rifle and finds no one, and moves on to the next. Coming around the corner and into the second room, Tack faces another empty quarter. When suddenly, slithering from out of the vent below, two of the strange men, unclothed, conjoined by a grotesque tendril wrapping their abdomens together, appear before Tack. They appeared much more feral and ravenous than earlier, with parasites of their own, which have contorted both body and mind. This be Beatrix's fate as well. They finally rip themselves apart from each other and lunge at Tack, both baring teeth, with grabby hands from the far left and the other from the right. Without hesitation, Tack opens fire with controlled bursts while stepping straight back into the central hub. Three quick bursts rupture the vile being, decimating its frail body and sending it to the floor, dead. Its vile companion stops in its tracks, hesitant, then lets out a lethal, terrorizing scream. Tack shakes his head away from the high-pitched cry, then looks back in anger and opens fire once more upon the creature, shredding it up and blowing it backward into the room to die in its mess. Tack turns around toward the entrance, gun first, and sees Beatrix on her knees, holding on tight to the ship's entrance. The parasite on her back shoulder now much larger, its legs partially protruding through her flesh. It looked like a reaction to the harm he had placed on Beatrix's friends. Do not interfere in family matters, Helmet. Beatrix is ours. Tat turns upward to the second floor at the last hostile, staring at him from over the command bridge. He still appeared human, yet just as sick as Beatrix looked when he first met her. Tat points his rifle. You kill me, you kill her, he whispers. I'll take those odds, Tak says, just as he fires a round right through its leg. The stranger growls and flinches, then clears the railing with superhuman agility and comes in hot over Tak. Tak performs a diving back roll into the room behind him, evading pursuit, landing on his side and tries to get a bead on his attacker before opening fire. As soon as the man turns its head and begins morphing, Tak fires a headshot, collapsing the creature into a pile of melting body matter and dirty attire. Tak brings himself to his feet, casually lowers his rifle, and moves in closer to inspect it. Suddenly, Beatrix begins convulsing. Tak runs over to her aid when he sees something under the stranger's attire about the size of a cat emerge and then scurries from out under it, scaling the wall and disappears into the upper regions of the ship. Ignoring for now, Tak focuses on bringing this woman back from the cusp of death. He sprints into the first room, quickly investigating for its purpose, rummaging around immediately, finding objects of similar use, but not quite what he needs, but continues to dig further. Tak hears his new friend scurry into the room, whatever it was. With one hand still on his rifle, he was ready to find out. He begins to swing over several cabinets in pursuit of what he was looking for, the last one containing military-grade medical supplies. Last time Tak saw something like this, he was bedside caring for a friend in cryosleep. It was powerful stuff. Jab them in, all is merry. Tak reaches for the supplies, when suddenly, a slimy, bizarre, arachnoid creature scurries across the counter and lunges for the pit of Tak's arm, the poison-soaked beak erect. Tak spots the creature and sweeps it off of the counter with a powerful kick, sending it into the middle of the room. He then fires bursts into the creature, shredding it into chunks of orange matter, killing it. Tak grabs the medical equipment and sprints back to Beatrix. He retrieves two cryo javelins from the kit and thinks hard before applying them. With little expertise and knowledge, the window of failure is quite large. Cryojecting the parasite will preserve her condition and kill the parasite, but also could kill her outright in the process. A safer route for his skill would be to cryoject her belly, bringing her life clock to a complete halt in time for him to bring her to some medical experts, but in turn paralyzing her from the neck down, ending her career as a helmet. The clock was ticking. Being a spec is not all there is to life, but I wouldn't want someone else taking that choice from me. I accepted the risks when I stepped into a field ship, and so did she, thinks to himself, just before surgically impaling the parasite with intense focus. Tak stands over his work, a bit rougher than recommended, and though ruining the tool in the process, Beatrix's breathing began to calm, the hemorrhaging of the blood sustained, and the infection area healing. There seemed to be some orange discoloration, but this was beyond Tak's scope of knowledge and technically not his problem for now. A single spacecraft zips across the sky. Word of the downed field ships is now making its round through the mainstream as others make their way to the coordinates. With Beatrix settled, Tak picks his rifle back up and double sweeps the ship and vents to be certain before finally lowering his guard. It's actually a pretty cozy ship, he thinks. It evokes a bit of nostalgia for him. He heads to the cockpit to establish communications with Mark in Field Ship 142. As he ascends the stairs, he finds Beatrix's command space, large monitors, LED-lit dashboard, and a wall of neatly organized information pinned up by Tak's. Beatrix was incredibly organized and thorough. It was very impressive, Maybe a thing or two could be learned from her one day. Tack leans into a bulletin board for a closer look. Judging from the articles, leads, mugshots, and other various research, it appears she was on some sort of crusade. An ongoing mission to liberate a small civilization from their overlords is all that could be discerned at a glance of countless papers surrounding her monitor. Suddenly, Mark can be heard whispering through his earpiece, complaining about Coach and Thraxian politics. Then focuses.
Spec, Tack, I'm glad you're alive, and I hope well. But I'd be a liar if I said there was one single thing I care more about than knowing the status of my friend. What's the update?
I've got your sister.
My sister? No, she's not my sister.
Tack continues. She's hurt pretty badly, but I think she's stabilized. We're on her ship now. I'm not a pilot though, so we're either going to have to wait for her to recover enough to get us off the ground, or we're going to need some help. We hear a small sigh of relief come from the other end of the phone.
What happened? There isn't time. I'm going to contact and send an acquaintance your way shortly. They'll bring her home. Just sit tight. Got you covered. And thank you, Spec. Keep your lines open.